Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay of the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Bonnie. I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, we would like to let our women know that if anybody would like to call in to make any comments or ask any questions, we are available. Our phone number here is area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat it one more time. Area code 646-716-4893. And please feel free to call in if you have any comments or any questions for either one of us. We're always happy to take your calls. So what's new with you, Misty? How are you holding up in the summer heat of Florida?
I think I'm melting. It is so hot. So I will never once again remind you how nice and pleasant the weather is here during your winter. I'm ready to move to Alaska. If it's cool. It's very hot. But it's summertime in Florida. That's the way it is. You know, that's why you stay at the beach to try to stay cool.
I don't know. I don't think I could handle it. I've been down there in the summer. I feel like I want to go somewhere else.
Yeah, it's hot. It's
too hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it's so hot out when you step on the sand, it actually burns your feet. So, yeah, it can be even too hot at the beach, too. But that's, I guess that's the price you pay for warm weather of the winter. Who knows?
Well, Misty, there are several things I wanted to discuss tonight in the aftermath of our show from last week with Dr. Lauren Olson, which was, I thought, an interesting show.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to hear the insight of how gay men are thinking, because it's very obviously they're thinking differently than I'm thinking. And that's okay. You know, they're gay men. I wouldn't expect them to think the way a straight woman thinks or to really necessarily understand the way a straight woman thinks. But, you know, he did make several comments that, you know, I took really opposition to. And the similar kind of comments made by Joe Court, who's another apologist and another therapist and someone who makes excuses for gay men. Only Joe Court does it in the sense where he tries, you know, in many cases to confirm to gay men that they're really not gay. And he believes that you can be straight and have outside sexual affairs with men, which I don't get it, you know, and I guess I never will. Because to me, if you're straight and you're not going after a man's penis, I mean, that's just not within your thinking. And if you are going after it, to me, that means you're gay. Now, that's not to say you can't love a woman. And, there are, you know, I always believe that there are those men who I call the limbo men. Those are the men who are living in between two worlds. They're neither here nor there, fish nor fowl. You know, they're in the world of straight emotionally, but they just can't emotionally move out of it. But sexually, they're not there. They're in the gay world sexually. So they do consider themselves straight because they have wives and they cannot relate to the gay, you know, lifestyle. And so they, you know, say it's just a sexual thing, it doesn't have any meaning, and they still consider themselves straight. How do you consider those men, Misty?
Well, here's what I'm going to say. Regardless of how they define themselves, when I'm in a relationship with someone, I want them to be someone that is not going out with man or not going out with woman. And I think some of these people get so hung up in the definition of what they consider, you know, gay, and then they try to backpedal out of it. You know, if they don't want to be called gay, you know, I guess I have to try to understand it. And it's hard to understand, you know. It's hard for me to understand. But I'm coming from someone... It's coming from a person that lived in the closet with a gay man. You know, I didn't know what to do. You know, I was so confused. Of course, he always said he wasn't gay. And, you know, thinking back, maybe he thought he was one of those men that wanted to stay married and have affairs you know, with men on the outside and stay married to a wife. I can't live that lifestyle. I can't. It's heartbreaking. I'm speaking for myself. It's heartbreaking. It's devastating. And it's something that was beyond repair for me. It's something that every time I tried to make it work, it was always me conceding, me trying to fix something that he didn't think there was anything wrong with. So, you know, I have such a hard time wrapping my head around it when they try to get into, you know, getting creative with defining it, I guess you could say. You know, I don't care what it is. If I'm with someone and they're going out with a man or a woman, they're not for me because, you know, I'm not plan B. I think any woman that should be in a relationship, she should be plan A for that person, not plan B. And, you know, when
relationship. But what if the man says, Misty, that, you know, I love you and I'm not going to cheat on you, I'm just having gay fantasies?
After the experience I've had being married to a gay man, at this point in time in my life, I don't think I could handle that, being married to that person. That wouldn't be for me. I mean, some people can do it, that's fine. Now, if I had just been told that, you know, 18, 19 years old and thinking, oh, well, it's just fantasies, we're not going to do anything, I don't know. Maybe I would have done the same thing all over again. At this point in time in my life, you know, it wouldn't work for me.
Well, first of all, you know, it's like Joe Court saying that women don't accidentally marry gay men, and with Dr. Olson saying last week that women subconsciously on some level, you know, want to marry gay men when they marry them. You know, I just find those kinds of comments very disturbing. And it's like, you know, as I mentioned last week when I said, well, these gay men don't even know they're gay. How are we supposed to know they're gay? And then Lauren Olson comes up with, well, was he the kind of guy who was, you know, forget some of the terms he used, but, you know, like somebody you could talk to, someone who was, you know, positive qualities that any woman would look for in a man that we wouldn't necessarily think are gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't just attribute those to gay men. I mean, there are some really straight, wonderful men who are kind and understanding. It has nothing to do with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to just respond to that by saying that I thought it over all week. And I don't think there's as much of a subconscious need for a woman to pick out a gay man as there is for a gay man to pick out a straight woman. I think that his, you know, approach to finding the right woman is far more calculated. You know, I don't think we're out there looking for a straight woman. But when a gay man wants to find a straight woman, I think he knows on the prototype that he's looking for. So those are the prototype, you know, things I want to discuss tonight. And I know that in my book, The Gay Husband Checklist for Women Who Wonder, I do have a checklist in there of the prototype of woman who gay men actively, subconsciously, or consciously seek out. And I think that it's no accident, Misty, you know, we always discuss this, that the overwhelming majority of our women are in the helping field,
mm-hmm.
either as social workers, as teachers, as nurses, as mental health workers. I mean, isn't that so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Professional care.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think many of our women in your chat, many of the women that come to me as clients, it's really interesting that many of them are some sort of professional caregiver, meaning what you just said, whether it be a nurse, whether it be a teacher, I consider that a helping profession, nurse, teacher, mental health, social worker. I mean, the list can go on and on. Employed by hospitals, by hospices, those sorts of things where, you know, you direct contact with patients and clients that need care, that need be handled with care. And it's just so interesting it's alarming when you sit in a room, and I keep going back to, you know, when we do the retreats, when you sit in the room and everyone goes around and they introduce themselves. You have every field almost represented from the helping industry in there. I mean, it's just so interesting how so many of these women are natural and professional caregivers of some sort. It's just very interesting. And myself, even myself, I'm a therapist. I became a therapist afterwards, but still, I mean, you know, I definitely had those qualities. I think many of us do. And, you know, unfortunately, I think women in general in our society tend to think they can, if they meet someone and they're not quite Prince Charming, but they're almost there, they think, okay, well, I can change him. I can fix him. And I think that's a huge problem that we have, especially in people that are caregivers, because a lot of your care, you can help people, and you can help people's lives change for the better when you're a professional caregiver. So unfortunately, I think somehow that translates into many of our women thinking, okay, well, this isn't just right, but, you know, I can fix this, or he'll fix this once we get married, or this will get better. And, you know, it's, we don't have the power to change anyone else, no one. And we only have the power to change ourselves. And it's just so difficult when you see these relationships time and time again, these women, and when I say these women, I have to include myself, that continue to try to make some of these marriages work when clearly they're so broken, they're beyond repair. Mine was filled with abuse, and I can't. And it was so ironic. I was actually working on a psychology degree at the time, and of all people, I should have known better. But being in the caring industry field, you know, you care for people, it sort of backfired on me. I just kept discounting all the emotional abuse, the physical abuse, and all everything involved in that, not to even mention the gay stuff. But, you know, I just kept thinking, okay, he's going to change. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. And unfortunately, when you think that, you just start living in tomorrow. You can never live in the present. You're always living in the hope of tomorrow. And my tomorrow never came. My tomorrow never got better. My tomorrow continued to decline. It got worse day after day after day. Sometimes there were a few sparkling moments in between, gave you enough energy to go on to the next day that would usually be worse. So, you know, I think you really have to be careful, especially if you are in the helping, you know, nurturing industry, whatever it is you want to call it. If you're in that area where you help people, where that's your mission, that's your profession, and it defines part of who you are, you have to be really careful when you pick out a mate, whether it be, you know, whether you pick out someone gay or straight. You know, they may have qualities. You've got to make sure you're living a healthy, balanced life. Or, you know, you may pick someone that's very imbalanced, someone that's going to take advantage of you. And for a lot of their women, that's what's happened. They've been taken advantage of in terms of being the closet door. And even if the person didn't know they were gay when they went into the marriage, you know, we can understand that. You and I have talked about that repeatedly times, you know, so many times. You know, if they didn't understand it, didn't know, didn't think, you know, or thought they could change it, at the point in time they realize that they're not straight, I mean, it's really time to let the wife know. It's really time to let them know to back up, and that way a joint decision can be made. You know, it's like all of our decisions are made in the dark. Our decisions are made for us without us being represented, so to speak, because it's like the gay husband's making all the decisions, you know, whether they're going to stay in the marriage, how long they're going to keep it a secret, are they going to keep it a secret for the duration of their life. You know, there's so many factors in there. A lot of times the straight wife's left completely in the dark. But, you know, just I guess word to the wives, be careful if you are in the helping industry. That certainly doesn't mean that you're married to a gay man. It just means you're prone to be more nurturing to those type of people that need more nurturing.
Then the issue came up also, Misty, that if a woman's been sexually abused in her life, that subconsciously she's looking for a guy who may be gay, although she may not call it gay in her head, but she just may say somebody's not sexually aggressive, and that means somebody who would be gay. So I do want to say that I do feel there's some validity to that, that mm-hmm. women who have been brutally sexualized, you know, or had sexual brutal experiences when they were younger, may be very much not into having strong sexual relationships now that they're adults. So, I mean, in cases like that, it would be, you know, logical to think that they may be looking specifically for someone who's not very sexually aggressive, and maybe it would turn out to be someone who is gay, And that might be like a win-win thing, because here a gay man can find a woman who doesn't really have any sexual expectations for him, and yet he's happy to live hidden in a marriage. And, you know, for the woman, you know, that's like a win situation, because she doesn't have to worry about him being sexually aggressive. So I can see those kind of things happening, but for the overwhelming majority of women, you know, I don't like the fact that, you know, they're thinking that we should take the blame for picking out gay men, because I think that's absolutely ludicrous. Mm-hmm. And I think it's insulting. And, you know, one of the things that I've been mentioning the last few weeks is that I just had a book come out with my friend Doug Dittmer, a book called Over the Cliff, Gay Husbands and Straight Marriages. And I found this to be an extremely enlightening book. It didn't quite work out the way I thought, but that's okay. You know, it was extremely enlightening to me as a woman to read the stories from all these men, and I really felt it would be very helpful for our women to read it, for those women who just can't find proof or can't find evidence, or who are still sitting on a fence and they haven't decided yet, that this would be an opportunity to read these stories by men and see where their thinking was, and I thought that after they would read it, they would have a better idea. So I did want to spend, you know, a few minutes reading a couple stories from here just to give people an idea. So this one is called TJ's Story. And, of course, Doug interviewed these guys. Most of these guys had come to me, you know, for help. And I gave them my best advice and what to do. And then I sent them to Doug so he could work with them on their coming out issues. And this one's called TJ's Story. And it says, TJ first contacted us in January 2010. At the time, he indicated that his same-sex attractions were increasing as time went by. It is now 15 months later. TJ is still married, and I asked him to share his perspective. So this is his story. I am 44. I've been married for 17 years with 3 kids. I have a very good relationship with my kids. My marriage, however, is another matter. Counting dating, I've been with my wife for 20 years. It has been a good partnership, but as time has gone on, it has not really been what a marriage should be. We really didn't have a lot in common to start with, but we drifted apart emotionally over the years. We love and respect each other, but we're not in love with each other. We basically stopped sleeping together a while back. The only people that I've ever been attracted to were women. I never saw men who I found physically attractive. Never. That's why I never pursued men for sex. But that has always been in contrast to my other reality. Since puberty, I've had regular homosexual fantasies. I get turned on watching gay porn, reading gay erotica, etc. I also enjoy lesbian erotica and have had fantasies about my wife and lesbians. When I masturbate, they have always been just about exclusively homosexual in nature. With sex, I've never really fantasized about women unless it is a woman who is dominant toward me. And many times in them, she's either forcing me to cross-dress or forcing me to submit to gay sex acts. While I've also had many powerful orgasms fantasizing about being a sex slave to a guy, I've also had no trouble just fantasizing about consensual sex with men. I always just thought it was a fantasy life because I'd never actually pursued actual sex with gay men. A while back, I was flipping through a book at Barnes & Noble, Outing Yourself, and there were a couple lines in there from some psychologist. One said that people who have had homosexual fantasies and have had them for a long time, even if they haven't acted on them, are gay. The other stated the same thing, saying that people like that are your true homosexuals. It hit right at me. I'm not saying they were correct, but they were describing my life experience. I did an exercise in the book at home. When alone, I got in front of the mirror and said some things to myself. First, I made statements like, I, TJ, am heterosexual. I enjoy sex with women. I am sexually attracted to women. Things like that. Nothing. Then I stated other things. I, TJ, am gay. I am sexually attracted to men. I want to have sex with men. I am a homosexual, etc. My body definitely reacted to that. I had an erection. My fantasy started to change. I have had regular fantasies lately about coming out to my wife. joining some gay organizations, meeting a guy who I fall in love with, and we have a great life together as a committed gay couple. I seem to be embracing these a lot now. Before, it was always just anonymous gay sex with faceless strangers. A couple of weeks ago, after playing b-ball at my health club, I went to take a shower. I saw a guy in the shower who was soaping himself up. I couldn't help but to keep glancing over at him. I could tell that he is probably pretty well hung. I started fantasizing about him in the shower. I had to quickly get my mind off of him, but as soon as I got home, I masturbated thinking about him. I've masturbated several times since with him on my erotic mind. I'm going into midlife now. My marriage has become stale, and my homosexual fantasies have really increased. To be truthful, I am jacking off about twice a day now. I find thoughts of all things homosexual constantly on my mind. I go to sites that deal with homosexuality all of the time. Not necessarily sexual websites, but sites that are informative. I just don't know what to make out of all of this. I still find women attractive. Whenever I orgasm, the thoughts leave me and I convince myself that I am straight. I have always enjoyed sex with my wife. She could easily turn me on. But often I would orgasm while fantasizing that she was a guy or that she was a man and I was the woman. Could I actually be straight and this is all fantasy? I mean, when I see Faith Hill on the Saturday, on the SNF video, I'm almost mesmerized by her. So, what do you think of that, Misty?
Well, I think that gives a good description of some of the struggles that a man will go through. Struggles meaning, you know, feeling attracted, sexually attracted to men, but still in love with your wife. I mean, it's difficult at best. We know that. I think it just depicts the struggles going through that kind of face that, I guess, trying to deny that and then it eventually coming out. It's sad. It, you know, it's sad on both sides. It's really, and I can say that now. I'm so many years out of the marriage, I can say this now. It's just really sad on both sides. It really is. It's not really a cut and dry picture sometimes like we often think it is. I mean, because stories can be complicated. You know, if he's still in love with his wife, he still wants to identify as being straight, not gay. So, I mean, it's complicated.
Well, I'm sure he wants to be straight, but my bottom line is this, he's not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when a man has to constantly have gay fantasies, this is not straight. And you can sit and you can blame the fact that, you know, you fell out of love with your wife, that you don't have much in common anymore. But I think that it's really an excuse, Misty. I think the reason they don't have anything in common is because he's gay.
Falling out of love with your wife isn't going to make you gay. It happens every day. Straight men fall out of love with their wife and they divorce their wife. You know, that's
right.
Certainly not an excuse to be gay. Absolutely not.
So, I mean, you know, but I think that the fact is that if he had been a straight man, he may have still been in love with his wife. But I think when your mind is consumed with gay thoughts and then you think that your wife just isn't living up to what your fantasies are, it's easy to see where there becomes that emotional disconnect because I see that happening with these guys all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to read another story. This is called RM Story. He wrote, RM contacted Bonnie through her website on May 9, 2009. RM and his wife were devout members of the evangelical church. At that time, RM had just come out to his wife. Though he knew it was something that could not be changed, his wife did not accept that and felt that Satan was misleading him. Now, almost 2 years later, I asked RM to consider how and why he found himself in the situation of being gay and married to a woman. And his story is, coming out at 46, married to a woman for 24 years, what's that all about? I came out to my wife and family 2 years ago. It was a very heart-wrenching decision. The actions that followed were very difficult and cloudy. I was full of fear almost every moment. I was unsure of the reaction I would get. I had played the situation over so many times in my head that I was sure I knew their responses. What is interesting is that I didn't know their responses. I only knew what I would have said. Well, I only knew what I would have them say if they were thinking with their thoughts, and they are not. They, my wife and children, are independent, functioning people in society. They are educated, they are socialized, they are cultured, if Americans consider culture anymore. They have had experiences that many other people have never had. They laugh, they cry, they get frightened, they all have vices. All in all, they are human. What more can any of us on this planet be? My journey had been not unlike many other men my age and from my generation, the baby boomers. Although I thought my experience was quite unique, it is not. There are gay married men coming out of the closet daily. What the hell? Is this the last remnants of a homophobic society? What is my journey's purpose? Do I ever have to know its purpose? I'm living, right? I have had quite a past, quite a varied, full past. I have packed a lot into this journey. I have lived full and loved full. But for who? And does it matter for who? I've been responsible for my actions. I got a woman pregnant and raised our fabulous daughter and three other individual exuberant adults. I gave as much as I knew and as much as I could. It was just a kid. I was just a kid for most of it. And I acted the kid probably for all of it. And the woman I fell in love with, what happened to all her dreams and hopes and joys and faith after she has experienced the slow motion train wreck I've been in the life? So having done so much, what do I do now? The consequences of my actions, is it a choice, and then is it something that happens, and then? I would have to at least acknowledge that things happened in my life before I even knew who I was. I had genetics poured into one from a sperm and an egg. I pushed out into a family that was struggling with their own realities. I had people take care of me, talk with me, clothe me, and feed me, all of these things in variations of depth of love. I was told to do, told to say, told to look, and told to behave. All these things before I knew how to question what I was or what I should be doing. Then came awareness of self, awareness of others, disparity. Is that the measure we want? Is it just one set wanting accommodations or the one that with more left over? What are we told about disparity? It doesn't matter. You can't compare. You aren't them. Of course you're different. Embrace yourself. What if no one likes yourself? What if you see that others make fun of you and yours? What if all you hear are words of ridicule? Who wants to be yourself in that situation? I didn't. So I take me for granted and start doing what others say. I embrace myself. I think I'm okay. I don't see any flaws, and then reality. The words are aimed at me. I am different, too different, so different than others tell me. How different I am, so different that I'm not allowed to be me. Who would want to be me? How do you just pick up the broken pieces of yourself at 13 and say, hey, I'm really okay? I think what those other kids are saying is wrong, and I don't agree. The answer is you don't. I became someone, something other than what I was supposed to be. I evolved, I coped, I learned how to maneuver through the system and not get noticed anymore. I became empty, I was a cipher in the snow. But then things started to change. You grow, you find others that can accept you, but what you do with all of that, you have learned about yourself. How much you hate yourself, how much you really don't want to be you. All because they didn't like you. Hell, that's what alcohol is for. And so the pain gets numbed. It is etched in every synapse of your body. It is every memory ingrained into your brain. You don't forget. It gets blurred into the background. You start to make new friends and things change. But they don't. Inside, you know you are not able to accept yourself for who you are because no one else did. It doesn't matter if they do now. They didn't then. I still have the acid etched disfigurements of my psyche as proof. So tell me, wise one, how do you reconcile this person who once wasn't acceptable to other children and the person who has grown into an adult and is acceptable? The lie still lives inside. A whole life is created around this person. Other lives are affected. Even worse, other lives are created by this person. The cycle continues, and things are told to the little ones. Things are given to little ones. Little ones begin to believe, and it continues. They now have an acid etched psyches of their own to bemuse and dawdle over. And here I stand with a decision to make. Do I walk out that door? Or, no, that isn't a question, is it? Two sets of rules. No one knows if there were two sets to begin with. What we do know is that there has been one set of rules for many, many years. These rules became law, became master, became executioner, and they live on. Those who did not live according to the one set of rules were punished, disbarred, outed, abandoned, and told that they did this to themselves. Or, if they had lived according to the one set of rules, they would not have been displeased to the arrest. So in order to be peace, many had to choose to play by the one set of rules. Unfortunately, not everyone was designed to live by one set. It started as murmuring in the quiet hours of the night. Then characters emerged, with only inflamed with masses. And the sentences became formed and even protests. There is another way. Does that imply a second set of rules? What does it mean for the one set of rules? What are we finding out there that those who love the one set of rules do not like to be told? They cry for a standard to measure the absolute. This guy's story was, like, really intellectual, don't you think so?
Very.
I know. Well, eventually, he gave into it. And, you know, that's his bottom line. But what I like about this book, I mean, there are a lot of samples in each chapter, you know, of men telling about how they came to terms with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, how they cheated on their wives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I say, that wasn't the intent of what this book was supposed to be about. It was really supposed to be a guidebook for men who are looking to come out on what the best practices are.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found to be most useful is the fact that women are able to really learn from this book, because for those women who believe that their husbands don't have a chance to cheat, what they were thinking, in many cases, you know, believing that, you know, their husbands didn't love them. I think in all cases, just about all cases here, their husbands really loved their wives when they got married.
Mm-hmm.
And they really were hoping against hope that, you know, somehow this marriage would work out. And I think a lot of them didn't come to terms with their sexuality. It's like last week when Lauren Olson was talking about his sexuality situation. He claimed that he didn't know anything until before the age of 40, when he just happened to run into a guy and fall in love with him, which I find, excuse me, really unusual, because almost every man who's in this story, for sure, you know, they're very clear in saying that, you know, they always knew that something was different about them. You know, they may have suppressed it, like this guy said, you know, he just tucked it away and try to not have it, you know, rear its ugly head, you know, while he was in the middle of, you know, getting married and having children. But almost everybody knew something, you know, so I think that's good. Like, a lot of these guys talk about, you know, before they got married, like, here's one guy that he's talking about. He said, my wife and I were together for 10 years, and then I moved out and we lived apart. I lived on my own and away from her for 5 years. And since the kids were young, I spent a lot of time trying to maintain a good relationship with them. It never really worked. My wife kept making life difficult and using the kids against me. I was so beaten down by her tactics that I attempted a sort of faux reconciliation in an effort more to bring peace to the situation than anything else. This lasted about 3 years, but during that time I still maintained my own place and never really moved back or fully committed to being with her again. Although I was over the house a lot, I spent a lot of time with her trying to be like a family, but it didn't last. The major problem I had was that I never really had a good support network in the gay community until a few years ago, and I didn't get counseling, which I think would have helped considerably. And, you know, Doug said to him, you know that you were attracted to men at an early age, telling me about your childhood and adolescence. Did you act on those feelings before marriage? And he said, I started thinking about same-sex attractions at the earliest age I can remember. Those feelings were not overtly sexual in pre-adolescence, but there was something definitely there that I didn't think other boys experienced. I had my first same-sex sexual experience at 12 with my neighborhood friend. I didn't think of it then as gay, since I didn't know what gay was at the time. All I know was that it seemed normal to me. I took to it like a fish in water. And then he said he was married at 31, and Doug asked him, prior to marriage, did you consider yourself gay, straight, or bisexual? He said, I never considered myself bisexual. That I knew was not me, so I never went through any bisexual transition or anything like that. I never gave it much thought to classifying myself as straight or gay prior to marriage. And he was asked, did you feel that getting married would eliminate those feelings for men? And he said, yes, I did. But it didn't do that, of course. And here it says, you mentioned that you didn't want to have sex with your wife. Did you have performance issues, or did it become something you wanted to avoid? And the answer is, I can't say that it was horrible, but it was not enough satisfying to feel fulfilled. I didn't have performance issues because I was just able to drift off mentally and think about guys during sex with my wife until it was over. After a while, it became something I wanted to avoid, and I did avoid it with her and eventually stopped having sex with her altogether. And, you know, so I think it's important for women to, you know, read this kind of stuff. Don't you?
Absolutely. Especially if you want to try to understand, and also to the women out there that really feel that intuition that their husband or ex-husband is gay, but they never got the confirmation. I would think the book would be really helpful for them as well, just to read some of the
stories.
It really
is, because, you know, these men all talk about, you know, they're cheating, they're infidelity. I didn't go into any details on that on the phone. But, you know, on the show I'm saying this, but, you know, there's plenty of stories of how they were out there, how they made up their lies, how they lied to their wives. I mean, there were so many, you know, true confessions here. And I think it's so important for women to understand this, you know, to realize that, you know, a lot of women say that there's no way that their husbands can be gay because they know where they are 24/7. And I think that's the first real mistake that women, you know, feel so confident that it can't happen to them because they're with their husbands 24/7. But, you know, the reality of the whole situation is that you can't be with somebody 24/7. I mean, it just doesn't happen. Women say, oh, yes, I am. Oh, no, you're not. I mean, I just can't believe that. Anybody's together every minute of every day. Do you?
Well, I would have been one of those women, you know, 20 years ago that would have said, you know, how does he have time to cheat because he is always with me and this and that. But trust me, he after the fact and after I filed for divorce, you know, I realized and found out how many men he had been with. It's shocking. It was really shocking. And we were together all the time. So, I mean, where there's a will,
there's a
way.
Has there been any way in your mind that you would have thought, no, he has time to go out and have sex with men?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
When you were living with him, did you think at any point there was any way that he could have been out there having sex with men, that he had time for that?
Oh, absolutely not. I thought, because we'd made a promise. We'd made a promise that if either one of us had, you know, fallen out of love and was going out with someone else, that we promised each other that we would divorce each other first before we took it any farther. And I believe he was staying by that promise. I would have absolutely sworn that he had not gone out on me. I was one of those women. I would have bet my life on it. I mean, we had a very rocky, shaky marriage due to a lot of the domestic violence, but I still would have stood by him and believed and stood up for him if someone would accuse him of going out on me with men. Did I think he was gay? Yeah, I was thinking he was gay, but I would have sworn he wasn't going out. And, you know, during the divorce process, right before the divorce process, I found where he had gone out, I mean, numerous times. It was really devastating to think, number one, he broke the promise. Number two, he really broke the vows of the, you know, the marriage, because I consider marriage vows sacred. He broke that. And, you know, just continually lying to me, because, I mean, he had to be lying to me to tell me, you know, or somehow to meet up with these connections of these men. So it was just, it was really hard to realize that, because I was one of those women that would say that. And the other point is, you know, how many diseases did that expose me to? You know, I mean, we work with a lot of women with a lot of serious diseases. So it was really scary. First out of marriage, you know, going to go get tested for everything. That was really, really scary. Thankfully, and thank God, I survived everything without anything, but without any diseases. But that doesn't happen for all the women we work with. Even, you know, It's just really sad. It's really sad.
Yeah, and talking about diseases, I do want to mention that we're going to have a very important show on July 24th with one of our long-term support group members. And she is a long-term HIV survivor. You know, she's been infected for 22 years now. And she's very active in a very major AIDS organization in California. So she's going to be our guest in July, along with, I believe, the director of that organization and also a nurse, you know, who works with this.
Mm-hmm.
So that if people
have
questions, yeah, because I told her that her story is wonderful and inspirational, and I know this wonderful woman who's beautiful and, you know, who's really fought this battle for so many years and who's really doing so well. But, you know, I said there are a lot of issues that I brought up to her, and she said, well, those are really medical issues that she's not that, doesn't want to give an answer to. But she said that there's a nurse from their organization, and she's going to ask her to join us.
That'd be great.
You know, I think it's really important for women to understand what the consequences can be of having unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm.
And even though a lot of women, you know, it's just really heartbreaking to me that what happens so many times is that once a woman suspects that her husband is gay, or she confronts him and he admits to it, in her desperation to keep her marriage together, when he's going through that second honeymoon period of feeling guilty, and that happens in many, many cases, I call it the second honeymoon, where once you suspect him or accuse him or catch him, that he comes to you and says, honey, honey, I'm so sorry. I don't know what I was thinking. It'll never happen again. I just want to be your husband and be faithful to you. And those women are just so relieved that their husbands are there and not leaving them. And so in their gratitude, you know, the husbands, of course, will want to have a lot of sex with them for at least, you know, a week or two to try to throw out their suspicions and that, you know, it's something that's not going to change. And the wives allow them to have unprotected sex with them in their desperation to prove that, you know, they believe in their husbands. So we've had a lot of women caught that way with sexually transmitted diseases. And, of course, HIV could be devastating, especially, you know, even though there's medicines out there today that certainly make it far more sustainable than before, you know, it depends on so many different factors, so there is no guarantee. But, you know, HIV is just like one of the, you know, major devastating, you know, sexually transmitted diseases. But there's plenty more out there, right, Misty?
Absolutely, plenty more. You know, we work with women all the time that they show up with different things. You know, anything from HPV to, I mean, just all sorts of things. You know, it's left me at the moment, but the one associated with the, you know, hepatitis, that's the one, you know, you can show up with all sorts of things that, you know, can really be damaging, and they can lie very low until you start having medical issues. And then you
realize.
Well,
hepatitis is terrible. Also, they get syphilis. They've also had gonorrhea. Herpes, which that's certainly something I wouldn't want to have and worry every time about having something sexually transmitted.
Mm-hmm.
Also chlamydia, also HPV, you know, virus, precancer virus.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of different sexually transmitted diseases that our women are really vulnerable to. And these people are going to tell us how to approach it best, you know, how you can get tested, you know, what fears not to have, what your realities are. And I think the good news is that today people are certainly living much longer with HIV.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it was when it first came out, and, you know, back in the 80s, where back then it was an automatic death sentence.
Mm.
I mean, you just didn't plan to live because it wasn't going to happen for you.
No
matter what you took, the medications weren't strong enough back then. But today, you know, miraculously, people are living with AIDS and HIV because of the medications that are available.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you, you know, do have this disease, you can certainly, if it's diagnosed early enough with medication, you can really have success with it.
Absolutely.
But I think even though you have success with any transmitted disease, you know, it's still devastating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't imagine facing that. I admire anyone that can go on about their life and have a great attitude and be determined to live, you know, take their medication and live. And, you know, so many of them do live very fulfilling lives. But I can't imagine waking up every day facing that. What would that be like, you know, when someone that you cared about very much or loved very much, you know, gave that, transmitted that to you? I mean, it would be rather scary. I mean, it's just a constant reminder of being with that person. Yeah, it would not be easy. It's very devastating. Any type of chronic illness that can be life-threatening is not easy mentally or physically to deal with.
Well, like I say, there's certainly, you know, with these marriages, a lot of side issues, you know, that aren't brought to the forefront, and certainly sexually transmitted diseases are not something that people like to think about. They're not something they like to accept, but we always tell our women, if you're involved in sex with your gay or suspected gay husband, gay, bisexual, asexual, C-sexual, bicurious, whatever terminology you want to use, you must use protection. You know, it doesn't prove that you love him more because you don't use it. It proves that you're pathetic because you're not using it, because you're not thinking with your head. You're thinking with your heart. And, you know, if you suspect in any way that he's been involved in other relationships, you need to be protected. Because if you would see the devastation that our women have, you know, who messed up on this and who weren't protected, then you would understand better, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, ask any of those women that we work with, you know, if they would have wished or would have thought to have used protection, I'm sure they would have said absolutely yes. If they could have, redo something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the women didn't even know as well. It's, you know, that their husband
was having affairs. Oh, I'm sure that most of them
didn't know.
Like this woman is going to be on our show. She had no clue. Yeah, this would have been the last thing that she would have thought of. You know, you're in a good marriage and you're, you know, with your husband. Why would you think that you need to wear a condom?
Absolutely.
Right?
Well, why
would
you
even think your husband's gay?
Yeah.
You know, in many cases, people have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I get letters every week, Misty, from women who say they're afraid of saying anything. What if they're wrong? You know, I always tell these women, trust your instincts. You know, this is your best way to know. And then say to yourself, would I want my daughter or sister or, you know, some other female that you're close to, how would I feel if she was in that marriage? Would I tell her it's a good marriage, she should stay in it?
Mm-hmm.
And almost every woman who writes to me, when I present that question to her, she says no. So then I say, well, why do you want less for yourself than you would for your child or for your sister?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if anything, you should want more, right?
Exactly.
And hopefully I get women to see it, you know, a different way. Well, Misty, were there any other issues you wanted to bring up tonight?
I think we covered a huge amount there. I mean, we went all the way across the board. This was a really good general talk session. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we covered everything.
I just want to remind people we'll be having our yearly annual get-together in Philadelphia September 24th and 25th. We'll also be celebrating my 60th birthday that weekend. So we're going to have lots of entertainment, and we're going to have a great time for people who can get here. Philadelphia is kind of in between Florida and Canada, I guess. I don't know. It's a good halfway point.
I guess so.
Well, it's closer than California. But, you know, we have really great rooms at a great price. You know, it's a very low-cost weekend for healing. And so if any of you are interested, we have a nice group of ladies who are going to be coming. If you need more information, please write to me at bondk@aol.com. And if you have any comments or questions to make, please write to me at bondkaye@aol.com. If you have any comments or questions for Misty, feel free to write to me, and you know I'm going to forward it to you, right, Misty?
Absolutely.
Just because it says something nice doesn't mean I'm going to hide it from you. I hope. So anyway, I want to wish you a wonderful week.
And
a wonderful week to all of our listeners. And we'll be back here next Sunday night on Father's Day for our Father's Day Straight Wives Talk. So would you like to wish everybody a great week, Wednesday?
I would. I would. Everyone have a wonderful week, and may your May your day be filled with love and beauty, and good night, and love to all.
Love to all of you. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.